Can you tell me something about the conditions on the Western Front, you know, the mud and the rain?
Oh, the mud was terrible. When you go in the trenches first and you get in up to your knees in mud and water, oh, it was hell cold. I mean, after you'd been in a certain time, your feet and legs would burn. Trouble, that was the old trench feet, you see. That's my trouble now. Look at my hands. It was frostbite at Gallipoli, and they're good. Last week I couldn't bend those fingers. Oh, it'd be terrible. They've peeled all over, and my feet are terrible. In fact, 2 years ago I went up to Tynemouth Hospital. I cut my arm there, look. Put the acid in there, look. Tins and ivy, a whole wall for an old couple. A couple of chops of this piece of ivy, and the third chop of the hatchet caught in the bush behind. Went up and had it stitched, and I suppose I lost so much blood, upset the bloodstream, and I started with nosebleeds. I had 9 or 10 terrible nosebleeds. And I'd been home about a fortnight, and well, as you remember, 2 years ago when the general election was, it was terribly cold weather. And I nearly packed up with a cold, and they sent me up to the hospital again. I was up there 10 weeks altogether. Quite was gone.
What was your saddest moment during the war? You obviously had some very sad moments, but was there any particular?
When I met my brother on the Somme, we were going up for an attack, and they were coming out. They were with the bridging train, but they left the pontoon bridges at Abbeville. And they used to take up road materials for the 6 heavy draft horses in these wagons, old bricks, anything they could find. And very often they were up in front of our guns with it. And we were going up for an attack, and I saw him on his horse. And I said, we were going up in sections, so they were shelling the roads. And I said to the sergeant, can I call out a minute, there's my brother. And he said, yes, hurry up and catch up. And they'd stopped because a shell had dropped on the wagon in front. And I spoke to him, and he couldn't speak. It shook him so, seeing me. And I said to the engineer captain, I said, what's the matter with the fool? And he said, it's a shock. And I said, where are you billeted? He said, on the Albert, I think it was Rockland Court, Albert Rockland Court Road, in a sunken road. Oh, I said, when I can come back, I'll call on you and see you. He said, right, do. He said, where are you going? I said, through Drucourt Village in the morning. He said, do you know anything about Drucourt Village? I said, I know all about Drucourt Village. I said, but I shall be back. They had 4 goes at Drucourt Village and all failed. The 10th Irish Division had failed. The Guards Division had failed. The famous 29th Division that was out of Gallipoli had failed, and they suggested sending in the Naval Division, and that's what they'd done. And the morning we went over, there was no barrage. There had been a barrage put down for weeks and weeks, and nothing happened. And the morning we went over, it was raining so hard they didn't put down the barrage. Jerry was in the dugouts, so we kept them in the dugouts. But there were so many dead horses and dead bodies in Beaucourt, in the main street of Beaucourt, you were walking on bodies and horses. And we had cotton wool soaked in disinfectant over our mouths. The stench was so bad. We went through Beaucourt Village, and we captured 2 lines of trenches, and then another division leapfrogged over us. We had to reorganize and get the final objective. When we got the final objective, a Cherry machine gun started firing in our backs. And the captain said, half a dozen of you go back and silence that machine gun. So when we went back, they went down in the German dugout, and they wouldn't come out, and they told us in broken English where to go and which way to go and all that, you know, Phil. So we went back, and they come up again, and while I was fixing up my machine gun, we got a couple of them with grenades, so they wouldn't come out. So we got some smoke canisters. We thought it was 4 dugouts. We shoved the smoke canister down each shaft. When they started to come up, I said, we chucked in grenades. and just afterwards I was hit in the head. And when I came back to the battalion, about a month afterwards, I said, I was told there was an inquiry and they wanted my evidence to know about, it took 85 dead Germans out of this dugout. Did I know anything about it? I said, no, nothing. You know what happened? I told the same. I was always told, you tell a lie, stick to it. I told the colonel, I told the captain of the company. I said, we took them prisoner, smashed the machine gun, and sent them back prisoners. With some of our wounded was going back. So this inquiry, I told him. He said, there was 85 dead Germans together. And I could have shouted three cheers. Oh, they were dirty devils, those Germans. We were down on the Somme, and they had some German prisoners they couldn't do anything with. And they told us, they sent us back in charge of them. And the first morning we went out with the army fellas, they told us all the bad ones, you know, which ones to keep our eyes on. So I said, the next day we went out on our own. There was one little German there, cross-eyed, he was chewing something and he keep on spitting at me. And the captain said, do you know, Corporal, that German spitting at you? I said, yeah. As long as he doesn't spit on me, I said, he can get away with it. But I said, if he spits on me, he'll get it. And just afterwards, he spit on me putty. And I gave him a chop. That German never knew what hit him, but he went down. And it was about 4 inches of slurry mud. He went down on his face. And all in front, his face was covered in slurry mud. And then he was trying to get to his feet and he turned over on his back. You never seen anything like it. I gave him a chop like that in the windpipe. He died. He didn't know what the devil did in there. But in the afternoon when he came back to work, he couldn't speak, he couldn't croak. Some of them were all right. When I got wounded the last time at Passchendaele, 6 Germans carried me quite 7 kilometers. Bumped down a few times, you know, they fell in the mud, sorry. One of them could speak English, sorry. And when we got to the Alberta dressing station, Canadians, there was a Canadian medical officer, equivalent of a major. And I said, could they do something for me? Told them where they brought me. And he gave them all a special paper, you see, and told them to show that when they were transferred from one lot to the other. And he said, you'll go straight through for England. And he said, you won't see England again. You're going to have a good try, and I'm here.
I heard quite a lot of tales about the rum ration. Can you tell me something about it?
Well, we used to have it all the time. Yeah. That was a corporal's job. My job in France was fetching the company's rations. And look out, the corporal had to carry the rum jar. But look out if he lost it. He didn't go back to his company for a week till they'd forgotten it. But we had some American newspaper correspondents come up with the transport in France. I don't forget exactly where we were now. Transport officer said, will I hand them over to battalion headquarters? I took them up to the battalion headquarters, told the colonel who they were. He said, right, take them up to your company. So he took them up to the company in the trenches. I think it was Arras, and we were up there for a rest. It was all peace, perfect peace. The larks were singing, you know, and everything. And we chucked the matchstock down in the trench. Hey, pick up that matchstock. It's all spick and span. We used to sweep the bottom of the trenches with a sandbag and all that. And all you could hear from these Americans, where was this goddamn war? No wonder it was lasting as long. There was nothing being done. So I used to fetch the rations, and 2 or 3 times I noticed the captain of the company was timing me when I would leave and when I would come back. So one night we went away. A corporal leading the party. I bring up the rear, count the party powers, and the ration party completes, there's so many men, right? He said, hurry. I said, that was enough for me. So I said, the transport come up as hard as those poor horses could go in the mud. I said, chuck out the rations. Here, Corporal, here's a rum jar. Quartermaster Sergeant Colbera. And they were gone. We got up in a S bend near the reserve trench, went across. And I stopped. I said, everybody get down. And he said, what's up? I said, I don't know, but somebody's going to bust loose. Went back through, and the Lance Corporal was bringing up the rear of the party. And he said, what's up? And I said, I don't know, somebody's going to bust loose. And he was called Lance Corporal Bond. He said, you got the wind? I said, no, I haven't got the wind up. And with the same, I said, Jerry put a barrage on this reserve trench. It was on about half an hour, and I said, you could hear the old machine guns going up there. So when it started, I said, we came, there was no trenches left, communication trenches, nothing. It was level. When we got up there, I said, there was the captain, his arm was in a sling, he'd been wounded. Dead and dying, I said, all over the place. And he said, where was I when it started? I said, in that big ass bend. I said, you frightened me when you told me to hurry. I didn't. I stopped. He said, I got you timing. You was right in the reserve trench. I said, no, sir. I should have. I'd carried on. He said, any casualties? I said, a couple of slight wounds. I'll have to go away otherwise, all right. But these American correspondents didn't ask where the goddamn war was afterwards. A day or two afterwards, they was told to pack up and get out of it. They said they couldn't go fast enough.
Were you ever in a bayonet charge?
Oh, yes.
Tell me something about that.
In the first landing ever at Gallipoli, that was 61 years ago, the 4th of March, I was a major's orderly, and we landed right in the main fort at Cumcao. And he said, get across and see if there's any Turks in there, boy. And I said, I jumped down to get across, which was like a road, wide road, all down, sunk down with great stoneworks inside. And I said, I jumped down and there was three Turks there. I said, one had a vicious lunge at me and he drove his bayonet right through my five waving pooches. And he got the sleeve of my right arm pinned as well. And I said, and I dropped the butt of my rifle and he impaled himself on my bayonet. I said, he was dead as a doornail. And of course, I'd lost my rifle and bayonet. The other one come in, and I said, and I grabbed his bayonet with one and his rifle with the other. I said, of course, we were trained to take the rifle and bayonet away. And I said, he was so big and strong, I couldn't. And we were always trained, if you miss with your bayonet, don't worry. Kick, you won't miss with your boot. And I kicked that poor devil on the shin bone. Cool. I said, I always regret that. I said, his shin bone came out through. It was about 4 inches of shin bone showing out through. I said, didn't he, Hal? All at once, I said, bang, bang, over my head. It was the old major shot the other one dead. And he reached down and grabbed me and hauled me out. He called me a bloody fool for getting down there. And I told him, he told me to get across. How could I get across? It's a 14-foot road, unless I got down. And when we got back on the boat, we got him on the bridge and thanked everybody with what they'd done. And he said, yeah, Titchy boy, he said, killed three. He said, and he's still here. He said, that's what I want. Every time you go in, you big ones, kill three. He said, and come back. He didn't say he shot one, and I often felt sorry for that poor devil kicking him now. But that's what we're always trained to do. If you met the wet days in Stonehouse Barracks, we used to get down in the drill shed and they used to put down great palliasses and we had special rifles, the length of the rifle and bayonet with a great top on, so that would slide back, you see. If you made a point, the fellow was out, you see. And you could drop your rifle and have a proper set too, but if it got too vicious, there was the NCOs who pull you apart, you know, and give you a smack on the face or something until you go steady and control yourself. As in the old major said, he called me a little devil one day. He said, but Tom, I had to go with you. I said, the old man, he had to go with me. I said, I couldn't get his rifle away. I said, so I kicked him down one leg. He went flat on his back. I said, of course, I went in knees on his stomach, knocked all the wind out of him. About half an hour afterwards, he came back, wanted another go with me. He said, "You won't catch me napping the second time." And I said, "I did. I gave him a chop on the windpipe with my hand." I said, "The old man went down." I said, "We didn't see him for a week. He couldn't speak." I was about the smallest of a thousand when it was dreaming. Damn great fellas. We had one, Tubby Webb. He was the biggest man ever I've seen. He said, "When we go in action, boy," he said, "you go behind me." He said, "They won't see you, but they keep on hitting me," but they didn't, poor old Tubby. But what always beat me was the big, strong ones went first. Now, we had a physical training sergeant, Sergeant Hollier. He used to say, "You weak ones won't last 5 minutes." He was the first man I saw killed. Just funny. Yeah.
Did you feel upset at the time when you saw any sort of friends killed
around you? Break your heart, really. Yeah. I came out once and I lost all my section.
Where was this?
It was down on the Somme. I was gone up the advance party and seeing that all the lot, you know, the company got into position, and when I came back, the sergeant major told me only section had gone. The shell dropped in, wiped the old lot out. But we went in a raid on the Somme. We had 3 machine gun bullets through my water bottle. And coming back, I caught up with a chap, had a bullet through his side, and I was opening him along. And all the rest had gone in, and they saw I was in trouble with this chap, you see. They come out and we picked him up and called him in, and the colonel was there in this raid. And I said, "There's 2 down out in no man's land." We had Sergeant Cobra. He was the coolest, he was called Cobra, but he was the coolest man ever I seen in action. Didn't matter how hot it was, old Dick, as we called him, was there. He said, "Come on, then, boys." I said, "Wait a minute, let me get my breath back." So we got out and went out, and we found a young officer, got a bullet through his thigh, got him up. Well, Dick got him on his back, a fireman's lift, you know, cuddled over. I said, "I'll go and find the other one." And there was a young boy in my section, only about 18, and he was laid on his back in a shallow, and he'd been hit in the back, and the bullet had come out his stomach. And I saw he was dying. I got him beside him and chafed his hands. And I had a job to find out what he was trying to tell me. And he was trying not to. He said, "Something about mummy." And I said, "Yeah, mummy's here," like that. And he said, "Kiss me." Go on, give him a smack on his face. And give him a smack on a kiss. And he said, "Bye, mum." And you could see the grin on that boy's face. He thought it was his mother. Come on, I came back. I couldn't bring him in. And I meant to him I wanted some help. 2 or 3 come out and we picked him up and carried him in. He was dead. As I kissed him, so he died. They saw I was upset. I used to vomit if I was upset. Terrible. And Colonel said, "Oh," I said, "you will go away and leave me. Let me alone." And then the old padre come back. I told him to clear off and leave me. Well, he said, "I only want to help." I said, "I know that, but leave me alone." In the small hours of the morning, the surgeon come back and come up. "Put me up a drop of brandy." He said, "You're on that, drink that." He said, "What happened? What upset you like that?" I said, "I'll tell you if you don't tell nobody else." And I told the surgeon. He told the colonel. Colonel come up in the morning, sat down beside of me. I said, "I told the surgeon not to tell you." He told me what he'd done, brought you up a drop of brandy in the medicine chest. He told him. I said, "Yeah, I know, I told him not to tell you." "God," he said, "that," he said, "one of the bravest things that ever was," he said. And I joined the Home Guard this last war.
Did you?
Yeah.
That was to seem like a picnic to you after the first lot?
No, I had to pre egg surgery. You get lads 15, 16 years old with a rifle and a lot of ammunition. You didn't know who was going west. And some of the youngsters were better than what the old ones were. So the two of us joined the Home Guard together. He said one night, he said, so we'll pack up this lot, me and you don't know anything. I said, look, John, he was called Willoughby. I said, when the war finished, me and you will be the two most important ones on Timor's seafront. So when the Home Guard stood down, I said, who was right then, John, me or you, Coe? He said, I got the top half of the seafront and he got the other half. My old pillbox is still up the seawall. That's where they ring me and going to bury me. What they've threatened me with, I don't know. All I hope is I go up on hold and crawl in hole and they won't find me. The Marines have, what the Marines have promised me and what they're going to do. The band is coming up here. Guard of Honor, I don't know what isn't coming. I want to just fade away if I can.
Tell me, the reason that you were number one, your actual number was one, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
Was because, you know, you joined up with this new Marine detachment.
Yes, you couldn't join. You couldn't join for less than 12 years. Mm. I would have quite liked to have joined for 12 years. Yeah. Yeah. We got home, poor mother and her boys. Oh dear, sobbing me. The first time we got together, she sobbed.
How many brothers did you have?
Five.
You had five.
I was the middle one.
You were the middle one. Did they all go into the services?
Yeah.
Did they all come out alive?
The youngest was born in 1900. Of course, he joined up when he was 19, 18. He didn't see no fighting. He went to Ireland for his training, and he went to Germany with the Army of Occupation. And the oldest brother joined the artillery, got transferred to the Ordnance Corps of Wheelwright, lucky devil, and he went as far as Kelly. He didn't see any fighting. The other brother, living at Offcombe now, he went and volunteered, but they wouldn't take him because he was so bad on his feet. And when he did join up, they put him in the transport. He had his mule or horse taken about all the time. And the one over at Exmouth, he wanted to go back with me and join the Marines. I said, no, I'll tell him your age. And then he joined the engineers. He put his age on. And he came home and joined the Metropolitan Police after the war was on. And he finished up a detective inspector with just a village education. The two oldest brothers used to belt hell in with me, and two youngest brothers used to tell tales. So between the lot, I was in trouble. Oh, I was always a devil for skylarking. The old schoolmistress gave me hiding. I had another when I got home. The old policeman gave me hiding. I used to have another when I get home. The old policeman gave me an unmerciful hiding on once. He thrashed me with his old belt. Oh, mother had to cut my shirt off my back.
What was this for? What had you been up to?
He thought somebody had put a rope across the road at home. There was a tree, Avenue Beach Tree. Somebody had put a rope across the road. And the girl was down the road shouting, help, help me somebody, help me somebody. And the old policeman went running down the road, thought it was somebody genuine in trouble. And he fell over this rope. Oh, his hands, his face, his knees caught in the neck of us. And he thought I was one of them, and I wasn't. God, he gave me such a hiding. And my father and uncle were wheelwrights who were working in the carpenter's shop. And I crawled in that carpenter's shop. And I sat down. And I fell off the old bench. All the stool I sat on. And father wanted to know what I'd been up to because he was terribly strict. I said, I haven't done nothing, Dad. But I said, oh, Robert's the policeman. I said, give me a bloody hiding. I said, I said, I'll get my own back on him one day. And he went to pick up a piece of wood to give me another hiding, and Uncle stuck up. He said, don't you touch that boy, he said. And he called Mother and brought out the scissors and they cut and bathed and cut my shirt off my back. And Uncle wanted to know what had happened. And I told him. 2 days afterwards, I crawled out in the old carpet in the shop and sat down. And then walks old policeman, old Roberts. And he said, "There the varmint is, look." And I can see Uncle now. He went over and he got hold of that policeman. He was a damn great fellow, Uncle. And he got hold of him. He shook the old policeman till he didn't know where he was. And he said, "You touch that boy again." He said, I'll thrash you, he said. He said, "What did you thrash that boy for?" Father was there. And he told him. Well, Father said, "It wasn't home. I used to get terrible bilious attacks when I was a boy. Came home." Mother said, "Well, you better go to bed and lie down." And I went to bed. So Father said, "What time did this happen?" And he said, "About 7:30, near as I can tell." Well, Father said, "It wasn't home with him." He said, "Because he came home and he went to bed about 4:30. And he didn't come out again." He said, "So it wasn't him." So about a week afterwards, Father said, "Take this note up to the farm to tell him to send the horses Monday morning to Sidmouth Junction after some wood for a barn roof. And coming back, you know, boy like, or something groaning, thought there's something in trouble, cow or a sheep in trouble." He looked in over the edge, and old Roberts was laid flat on his back. He was paralytic drunk. I went in, I opened his tunic, I stuffed handfuls of old wet cow dung inside his tunic, opened his trousers, shoved it down inside his trousers, took off his boots, filled them up with cow dung, filled up his old policeman's helmet, put it on his head, and his belt was there, took off, but I stuffed his belt in a rabbit hole. There to afterwards, old policeman come in the carpenter shop, and I couldn't look up for laughing. And Uncle said, "Well, that's a dirty old uniform you got in." "Yeah," he said, "the other one's home drying." He said, "Home getting dry." Well, we hadn't had no rain for days. God, I stayed there, I don't know. I put my fingers in my mouth to keep myself from laughing. God, and then I told Uncle when old policeman was gone what had happened. He said, "What'd he tell me for, you silly young fool?" Well, I said, "You know you won't tell nobody else." So about a month afterwards, I went in and got this belt out of the rabbit's home, took home and hung it up in the carpenter's shop. Colonel policeman come in there afterwards. He said to Uncle, he said, "Dick, where'd he get that belt of mine?" And he said, "I don't know, somebody brought me in there and hung it up." Always a way of getting your home back. But I was a devil when I was home. I used to go and beat my hands against my sides and crow. I saw all the old moonlight nights and winter, saw all the old cockerels crowing for miles around. Yeah. When I came home on leave, I got to Sidmouth Junction about 5:30 in the morning. They slowed the train down to let me jump off so I wouldn't go on to Exeter. And the first farm I come to, I crowed. Now you could hear the old cockerels crowing. When I got in the village, I crowed again. They started and chucked some stones. I'm on the old galvanized iron roof of the old farm there. And when my sister went over after the milk, next morning at 8:00, old Farmer Damon said, "That damn brother of yours is home," and I said, "Whatever makes he think that?" He said, "Arthur's home, isn't he?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "I knew it." He said, "He started all the bloody cockerels crowing, all the dogs barking."
Oh, this is a lovely story. I'm most grateful.